You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. That's right, folks. It's Mike and Mike, and we are here to talk all about Woodstock. The 50th anniversary just passed, and we thought it'd be great for our music segment to talk all about it. And, you know, I have a personal history for it, and it's going to be interesting to hear what the others think about it, because did they see about it from the movie? Did they see about it from the records? Or some people, do they even know about Woodstock? It's going to be interesting to find out. But of course, the man who lives in the clouds with Lucy and the sky with diamonds, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Like, howdy, man.
Wow, you almost sound like the dude.
How's it hanging?
Oh, if we're at Woodstock, we're muddy.
Yeah, I'm getting wet, man.
Well, that's a personal thing. No. that's going to go in a wrong direction. Let's stop that right now.
It's definitely a wrong way to start a show that's a lot of fun. Yes, talk about such a big event. 50 years since Woodstock. And prepping for this episode, learned a lot about the event that really impressed me. So I'm looking forward to, like you said, sharing it with our guests. So it's going to be a blast.
Exactly. And we definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Definitely would love to hear from you. Does anyone out there, were they actually at the concert? Where do they have any memories? I know last week we talked to Sabrina Pandora, and she was there when she was a little baby. She was one of those naked babies running around, as she liked to say.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd like to find out who else was there. It would be great to do that. So please definitely write us. Definitely would like to also, you know, tell everyone, of course, about, you know, helping support the ESO network. And helping especially Earth Station One. You know, we don't talk about it enough, but definitely, please, wherever you go, listen to, you know, Earth Station One, you know, please go up, rate us or subscribe to our show or leave us feedback. We'd love to hear, you know, how can we improve the show? How can we change the show or whatever, you know, you guys think, because some people have been leaving us feedback and, you know, rating us. And that's how other people find out about us a lot of times. A lot of it is word of mouth, but a lot of it is also how people leave ratings for us or reviews. And we're up on all the major radio players and music players out there. So, you know, definitely, we'd love to definitely have you support us that way. And, you know, the other way you could support us, as we talk each week, is about Patreon. You can help become a Patreon supporter for as little as 25 cents a week. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/ESO network. And that's pretty much it. I think we do have a lot to talk about this week. So let's do a quick rants and raves. Mike, you went to the movies, didn't you?
I did. And, you know, every once in a while, I just, you know, I have to, like, there's, I love blockbusters. I love this summer movie season. I love superhero movies. You know, throughout most of the movies that we've seen this year so far, this summer, have been great. I think, you know, we've reviewed a lot of them on the show and I've had a blast. But it's really nice to just sort of forget about the superheroes, the capes, forget about the explosions, the violence, the you know, quippy one-liners, and just go see a movie about people. And so that's exactly what Michelle and I did this past weekend. We saw The Farewell, which is a beautiful movie. It's about a Chinese family. And the setup is that the grandmother, who still lives in China, has contracted a disease in which she's it's going to be terminal. But the family has decided not to tell her. The main character is an American, a Chinese American in the family who doesn't understand why they, you don't, you know, because over in America, you would have to tell her, right? So it's just a different sort of culture clash. But it's really well done. It's beautifully rendered by director Lulu Wang, who wrote and directed this based on an incident that happened to her. It stars Awkwafina, who I had no idea who she was before this. Apparently she's a rapper. And she's been in other movies like, I think she's in, is it Crazy Rich Asians? Is that the name of the movie that came out? But apparently she's in that as well as some other things. But in any case, she does a great performance in this, as well as all the acting is great. And it's just a nice, quiet, but really well done. It's very heartwarming. There's scenes in that made me laugh. And yeah, it's very touching. Of course it deals with, you know, family dying. So it's not all, you know, laughs and giggles. There's some real emotion with this as well. And, you know, through all the explosions and everything else that goes on, it's just nice to be grounded in a movie that's about people. And I appreciate this. I mean, normally movies like this come out in the fall for Oscar season and whatnot. So the fact that this movie actually got funded at all, the fact that it was released in the summer, I think they were just thinking, let's just do it and get it over with. But it did get some good buzz at Sundance, which is why I think it was picked up by a major studio and then distributed widely. So because a lot of times movies like this now just go straight to streaming, and some people see them and some people don't. So I had a great time seeing this. Michelle liked it as well. And I really recommend it. If you get a chance to see The Farewell, obviously I recommend seeing it in the theater, but you know, it's an intimate movie. So if you see it at home, I don't think you're going to lose a lot, but it's really, really a great film. It's a great film. And I think during Oscar season, you're going to hear this movie mentioned quite a bit.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing it. You couldn't stop raving about it.
I still can't.
I know. I could tell. That is awesome.
But you, sir, have been watching some things on the tiny screen.
I have. Well, it's not that tiny.
Or the slightly less big screen.
I was going to say, it's not that small of a screen anymore, you know? Most people have really big screens in their houses.
It's true.
And they're just getting bigger and bigger. And I can make lots of comments, but I'm not going to. So basically, I did watch two TV shows, and I want to rave about them. First one, of course, on Netflix is The Umbrella Academy. I might have mentioned it in the rant at the end of the show. And, you know, for our shout outs, talking about how good The Umbrella Academy is. Folks, this show is really good. I would highly recommend it. It's not your typical superhero show. And it's just, it's a very dark story and looks at, it's kind of looking at the X-Men type characters, but from a kind of different viewpoint. And it's just, it's really well done. And the actors, and the biggest one, I think, in the show is actually Ellen Page is one of the most known. But there's a lot of great actors in this. I've seen some other of these actors on the CW and other TV shows or movies, and so a lot of them are really familiar to you. And the story takes a lot of twists and turns, and it, you know, keeps you guessing. I don't want to spoil it because a lot of you out there haven't seen it there, but it is based off a comic book and very well done, and would highly recommend it. And then over on Amazon Prime, I would also want to recommend The Boys, which is a brand new show. It only came out, I think, probably 2-3 weeks ago. And a lot of people, it's already one of Amazon's most highest rated shows ever. And it's amazing. It's based off a comic book by Garth Ennis. And it is another one that is will blow you your socks off. It's basically if superheroes were just real people, not bigger than life. And, you know, you have like a Justice League type group who isn't as squeaky clean as things seem. And I'll just leave it at that. and there's really standout characters in this. Acting is really well done, and again has some very familiar faces, and definitely, you know, check it out. Again, I would love to talk about this. And if you see me at Dragon Con, please, I'll talk your ears off on these two shows. They are amazing. And, you know, both left the series is open for second seasons. And I've heard The Boys is already filming their second season. So I know they're coming back. And Umbrella Academy has just got picked up for a second season. So I know they're going to be working on it too. So look for both of those in 2020. So, you know, it's probably going to be at least a year. So you see the second seasons. But please watch the first seasons. These are definitely two shows. If you're into comics and superhero stuff, but not the typical superheroes, please check it out. So I think that's going to wrap up Rants and Raves for this week. We definitely want to hear from you guys. So please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. And like I said, if you have anything you guys want us to talk about, please write us. We definitely would love to hear from you. With that being said, let's take a quick break. And we have a new show joining the ESO Network, and they're going to be in the geek seat now. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment. Just keep that
going. Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. Well, we are now entering what I like to call the box office doldrums after the summer movies have come and gone, and it's really not until mid-September when things are going to start to pick back up again. But nevertheless, we still do have some new things coming out in theaters. Angel Has Fallen is a new political action thriller. It follows Olympus Has Fallen and London Has Fallen, the two other movies in this franchise, about a Secret Service agent played by Gerard Butler. I personally not seen any of the movies in this franchise, but apparently they're doing at least fairly well because they keep making them. Also, we have the horror flick called Ready or Not, which is about a newly married couple who attend a lethal family gathering. It's been interesting to kind of see, at least it seems to me, that we're having more horror movies lately and that they're doing pretty well in the theater or at least generating some conversation. It's interesting because I think that horror movies as a whole are a little bit cheaper to produce than some of these big budget like superhero, sci-fi, action epics that require so many special effects. So it's interesting, even though like some of these smaller horror films are not going to do the numbers of Avengers or Star Wars or something like that, but they have such a smaller budget that even if they're moderately successful, they still turn a profit for the studio. And I think it's also interesting to consider too, you know, we're living in times where there is a lot of fear and uncertainty. So maybe people see horror films as kind of this cathartic story, a way to process some of these fears and concerns that we have. And again, I've commented times before that horror isn't necessarily my favorite genre, but I do think it is interesting to see this kind of trending up, especially since there are some horror movies that I found really fascinating, like Get Out. I absolutely love that one. Thought it had some really insightful things to say. So definitely could be a trend that we're seeing and showing again that some of these smaller movies can coexist alongside the big blockbusters. There's a lot of concern, some that I've heard, about Disney acquiring all these studios and all these big blockbusters kind of like swallowing the box office. But I think there's still a place for some smaller films, and the current popularity of horror films is perhaps showing that. On DVD this week, we have a comedy called The Hustle about two con artists played by Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson. This is a movie that I had personally wanted to see but never quite got around to it in the theater, so now's my chance. We also have a dark superhero drama called Brightburn. I was curious about this one and also did not get a chance to see it in theaters. It's sort of the reverse of the Superman story about a boy with powers who starts becoming a villain instead. I think this is a really great and intriguing concept, especially as superhero movies are so popular these days. It's kind of intriguing to look at the flip side of that. What if someone with powers decided to become a villain instead of using those powers for good? So definitely looking forward to checking that one out. That's all the entertainment news I have for this week, but if you're looking for other content, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
Hey, Adam Thomas. Yes, Thomas Mariani?
You know how there are podcasts about bad movies?
Yeah.
And also podcasts about good movies?
Yeah.
Well, what if a podcast could cover both?
What?
Listen to Double Edge Double Bill, where a randomly selected yin and yang of a double feature is picked and then picked apart.
Now, who came up with this wacky idea?
Adam, we did. That's our show.
I'm learning something new every day.
Listen to us on the ESO Network and wherever podcasts are available.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Earth Station 1. We have a bunch of new friends with us tonight for the Geek Seat segment, and we are very happy to announce that we are growing here at the ESO Network once again, and we have Thomas and Adam from the Double Edge Double Bill podcast joining us.
Hello.
Hi.
Howdy, guys. Welcome to the station.
Thanks
for having us.
Yeah, it's good to be here. It's good to be a part of a community.
For those people who may not be familiar with your podcast, tell us a little bit about what it's about.
Well, basically, Adam and I have a podcast every week called Double Edge Double Bill, where at the end of the previous episode, we pick a randomized double feature based on either Adam and I either have two good picks or two bad picks. And then we each randomly choose a number between 1 and 10, and we've assigned our own individual movies numbers between 1 and 10, and that's what gets us our double features. So, for example, the first episode that's up on the ESO Network, which should be at the time that you're listening to this, is for the year 1999 as a topic, and the good film, which was Adam's choice, was Ghost Dog Way of the Samurai, and we ended up randomly picking that one as a good feature, and the bad feature from one of my two choices was the Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle End of Days.
Yeah, that is an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah. Oh, End of Days.
Yes, but that's what we like doing about the show is we get an interesting look at each other's tastes, and also we can get a very odd double feature that we would never in a million years think of. But we find the connections between the two movies. We also just either look really praising a movie or really hating on one, because we figured, you know, there are plenty of podcasts about great movies and plenty of podcasts about bad movies, but why not both, to quote the girl from the taco commercial?
Well, the fact that you're willing to, you know, keep watching bad movies for no other reason than the enjoyment of other people, just, you know, it goes to show. I guess you guys are a couple of sadists.
I mean, we get off on it, obviously. I think
that's yeah.
So tell me, like, how you guys got involved with podcasting in general. Like, what led us to this moment?
Well, I started podcasting in college. It was literally an example of, like, one of my favorite shows that is no longer in existence. That was called the Weekly Blend Audio Show. Was asking, like, hey, anybody who was a fan who wants to Skype in, you know, can go ahead and do that, and we can have you join the show for an episode. And I was like a Dickensian orphan with a hat in my hand, like, please, sir, let me on the show. And I was the only one that ever Skyped in. So I just became a regular on that fucking show. And then from there, I ended up doing another show that was called Horror News Radio, and I spun off into my own podcast about the 90s era of horror, and that's where I met Adam. And then I left the network that did a lot of those horror-related podcasts, and I decided to do my own thing that didn't just specify in horror, that became a bit wider range, and Adam was dumb enough to follow me.
Yeah, it was pretty stupid.
Yeah, you regret it every single day of your life.
I really do. No, that's basically, I mean, in a nutshell, how it started for me, too. I experimented a little bit with trying a couple podcasts here and there. But I found, you know, with a new wife and a new baby on the way, it wasn't that easy to hold to it. But Thomas would have me guest on his show almost weekly. There's very few weeks that I missed. And then when he left to do this one, I was the first person he reached out to, and I instantly was like, yep. And now it's been over a year.
Wow. Now, you guys knew each other before podcasting?
Nope.
Not at all. Okay, so podcasting brought you together.
Yes.
Yep.
Interesting. See, Mike, it can work out.
Don't press your luck, dude. Just remember that.
Yeah, it can also, believe me, it can also tear you apart. You'll find out. So where do you guys like sort of, as far as what your passions are, what you're bringing to the table, your fandoms, what would you say, let's start with you, Adam, your first, like your first passionate, fandom.
Oh, it's probably comic books. I grew up, my dad was a huge, huge comic book fan. I mean, to the point where his entire basement still is decorated to one half's the Fortress of Solitude, the other half's Gotham. Nice. And so I just grew up loving comic books and loving and loving. And then when the movies came out, you know, all that stuff. So it definitely was comic books first. And then it like 80s slasher movies. So it was comic books and then horror movies.
Very nice. Very nice. And Thomas, what about you? Where do your passions lie?
I would say probably as a kid, it was initially comedy, especially a lot of like animated cartoons. Like I was a big, basic cable kid who grew up with like, the first big wave of like Nicktoons, Cartoon Network, a lot of that stuff. And that kind of evolved into, a lot of, especially watching animated shows and finding all the different references to various different TV shows and films and sparking onto that. Like, especially I was such a huge Simpsons fan as a child, and then finding out like, oh, they basically remade Citizen Kane in various different forms and various different scenes from different episodes. You could string together all their parodies and get the whole movie of Citizen Kane. And so from there, I kind of just like really looked into and became a much more of like just a film fan in general. But I like to consider myself not really married to any single specific fandom. I like a good smorgasbord, as it were, of geek stuff.
Yeah, very excellent. Very excellent. Now, you guys mentioned that you've been doing the show for about a year. If for those people who might want to, you know, check out and listen to, of course, the first one that's available on the network, is there anyone in particular, an episode that you feel like is a perfect example of what they can expect from your show that you've done in the past? A double bill that you've had that you're like, that was really amazing.
One of my favorites probably in the past few years was we did one about Best Picture winners from earlier this year. I'm trying to remember what episode that was. It was somewhere around like the 30s or so. But we talked about a really weird double bill of we did Moonlight and we did Driving Miss Daisy. And we had a great guest, Jonathan Habden-McHale, who's been on several of our episodes, come on. And it was the great mixture that I really want to do out of the show, which is like actual intelligent discussion and our usual bullshit that we do. I think that's what I really aim for with the show, is to mix like genuine actual discussion about the two movies, how they kind of relate, how especially to the topic they relate. And those two were very interesting. And also we talked about silly stuff. And even that was a great example where Adam had not seen one of the films with Moonlight, which he picked just because he wanted to see it. And spoilers, he fell in love with it, which is something I also love with this show, is when we discover something that either we fall in love with or are flabbergasted exists, in this case, like really bad ones.
Yeah, my favorite might be the Star Trek episode.
Yes,
that's we did. We did The Wrath of Khan and Generations.
Yes,
that was a good one. And another good guest on for that one. It's got Casey Gerard, and the whole episode was us just laughing and doing bad impersonations and everything. That was just a fun thing to do.
Well, and also coming from very, very different perspectives, because Casey was way more of a Trekker than either Adam or especially I was. And so you get like a lot of different perspectives as well of that particular fandom, which we also love getting.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine with Star Trek, a lot of double bills could be made of the odd and even numbered.
Yes. 100%.
just mix and match, right?
Yep.
Well, very cool. Well, like I said, welcome to the network. We are glad to have you guys join us and be part of the network, the ESO network. And Mike, they are all warmed up and ready to go. So they are strapped to the chair. Both of them together. I've kind of been maneuvering as they've been talking. So,
and I'm not going to even bother to ask who's on top, who's on bottom. So
it doesn't matter. It's all good.
It's all good either way.
We're side by side, and it's really just horrible. We can barely fit in. We're like sardines. It's just so horrible.
Yeah, it's really awful.
You know, let the audience have their pictures however they want it. So it's okay. Yes. We're pretty easy that way. Here on the network, we're just glad to have you guys here, no matter what you're into. It's cool.
Of course.
Of course. So who wants to go first with the first question?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I'll go ahead and swing first.
All right, Adam. What was your favorite geek out moment then?
The first one I remember that really popped me that I was like, oh my God, was the classic I'm Batman from the 89 Batman.
Oh, sure. Of course.
That was great. And then the other one I could think of was the first Easter egg from Iron Man. From the very first one when you were like, oh my God, what's going to happen here?
Oh, of course. You're like going, oh, wow.
Yep. That's the potential. Awesome. Yeah.
Of course. What about you, Thomas?
Well, this is the confusion here because from what I heard from previous episodes, I believe it's actually just like a personal moment of geek outery. Is that what it traditionally is?
Yeah, that's your favorite geek out moment. So sure.
Well, there was
we always let you guys decide on what you know you guys have as answers.
Right. Very.
We don't force feed you.
We just don't like doing a lot of work.
No, really. Not right. at all.
Yes. So
we throw the questions out there and just leave it all up.
Exactly.
To
exactly.
That pretty much says everything about the ESO network too.
Exactly. Right.
Well, in terms of like a personal one for me, this is more of an actual experience I had. In my college, there was a two-night sort of event where they were showing the films of Edgar Wright, and they had Edgar Wright go on and do Q&As after each movie. And I can't remember. I think it was after when they showed Scott Pilgrim, because this was right before The World's End was about to come out. And I went up to the mic to ask a question. I was obviously nervous. I was very much like, oh my God, this is one of my favorite like directors that's currently working. It's so great. And the person who was running the Q&A, who was a friend of mine, chatted to Jessica, just said like, oh, come on, Thomas, you can do it. You got it. And I had enough of a wherewithal to like just say, you know what? I'm going to try, like in a kind of fake voice of sorts. And Edgar Wright laughed at that. And I like melted. And then I think I asked whatever question I did, but it didn't matter. Cause I was just like in a melted position of like, this fucker laughed at what I said. This is so great. I was just a puddle. It was so wonderful.
You just melted right there on the spot.
Yes.
Okay. That's fair. That is totally fair. All right, Thomas, what turns your geek off?
Well, in terms of like a disappointing geek moment, which I believe is the second question, it's for me, this is another event. This is like the polar opposite where cut to a few years after that, I'm at South by Southwest and I'm at a screening that's a 70 millimeter version of The Road Warrior, which George Miller is there doing a Q&A for. And he showed a clip from Mad Max Fury Road, which was about to come out at that time. And I once again got up to do the Q&A thing, especially because it was hosted by Drew McWeeny. And he even said, this is a once in a lifetime event, people. Come on up and ask him a question. And I was really gung-ho about like going to ask him about sort of the difference between him doing a Mad Max movie and then he also did like the two Babe movies. So I was very excited to ask him this question. And then they're like, well, before any people in the audience ask, I think we have a specific personal fan who wanted to come up and talk about something. And that person was Robert Rodriguez, who came up and did a whole spiel about like, oh, hey, I'm an independent filmmaker in Austin, and I'm a big fan of your work, and I love you so much. He went on and on and on about how much he loved George Miller, which is like, you could have had this meeting at some other point, dude. Like, other people want to go up and ask him a question. And I was like, I was going to be like the next person after like they had a couple other people come on. And then they were like, oh, and I'm sorry, we're done.
Oh,
yeah.
I can understand that.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Totally can. All right, Adam, same question.
All of Batman versus Superman? I can't.
That's easy enough.
Yeah.
That is totally understandable. Martha, why do you say that name?
Oh, why would he call her? Why would Superman call her answer. Martha? That doesn't.
I know.
Yeah. I know. Okay. Yeah, you better go because I'm getting enraged.
Okay. All right, Adam, what geeks you out the most?
One of my favorite things is I like hearing like potential casting news for upcoming movies that I might be interested in, like be it the Dune movie or the Marvel movies or even remakes and stuff like that. I just really, really, because then I can start putting a movie together in my mind once I hear the cast and then also obviously the director. But that always gets my goat, and I keep doing research and stuff once I get excited.
Oh, totally understand that one. Totally understand that one. All right, Thomas, what does geek you out the most?
I would personally say it's being around like classic sort of movie props. I loved when I went to LA, the first thing I really wanted to do was like tour one of the studios, and I did for like the Warner Brothers tour, which if you've never been to like LA and you want to do like some kind of movie touristy thing, that is the one to do. Don't go to Hollywood Boulevard. It's full of trash. It's pretty terrible. The Grauman's Chinese isn't all it's cracked up to be, but going to like the Warner Brothers store and like seeing like, oh, that's the costume that this person wore, or this is like some, you know, prop from Harry Potter, or just seeing something live in person that was like just on a movie, so especially like a practical effect or a puppet. Like I loved, I want to go back at some point, but one of the times I went to Dragon Con recent, in the last few years was to the Museum of Puppetry and seeing like the Kermit the Frog and all these other things.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, I was just in like sort of an ecstasy moment. Just like these things were like touched by Jim Henson and all this other stuff. That really just turns my geek on, as it were.
Awesome. But what turns your geek off?
I think geeks who are too overprotective. I think especially in recent years we've kind of gotten that with like sort of toxic fandoms that have been around. I'm going to go too far.
I don't know what you're talking about. Get away from me. I'm only right. You mean like that?
A bit, yes. That's a good approximation. That sort of thing, especially where it's like so counterproductive to change in a sort of in a fandom, especially like I think Star Wars has been a classic example of that, where in recent years I think Disney's done some interesting things, and a lot of people are kind of abrasive to it because it's not quite what they liked about it when they were younger.
Oh, no, totally understand that. What about you, Adam?
Pretty much the same. Toxic fandom, for sure. And also Kevin Smith.
Really?
I can't stand Kevin Smith, man. If you ever see our show, I got like 5-6 guys who are the mention of their name angers me. And he's definitely one of them. I really liked him growing up, but now it's like, oh, man. Just God.
So I guess you're not going to be first in line to go see Kevin, the Clerks reboot.
Oh, that looks terrible. Oh, that looks so bad. Personal opinion, but that looks rough. I'm not into boner humor comedies anyways, and that looks like just exactly what that is.
But Adam can't wait to watch his Netflix He-Man, which just got announced as we're recording this.
All right, Adam. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Captain Kirk, man. Just the stories and the pointers he could give you, be it through military tactics or picking up chicks or whatever. Captain Kirk's the man.
Totally understand that. What about you, Thomas?
I think this one's a bit more doable given some time travel and stuff. This is one that could have potentially happened. Jim Henson era Kermit the Frog. Like, I would love to have one of those moments where, like you've seen like the old Sesame Street clips where it's like a kid meets Kermit and instantly just talking directly to Kermit, Jim isn't even a factor. Like, I would love to have like that specific moment, or even like when he goes on if you've seen the old stuff where he's on like Tonight Show and stuff like that, and Kermit's just talking to Johnny Carson and being a bit more loose, a bit less kid friendly. Any of those kind of situations I would have died for.
Okay. So you could see yourself in the opening scene of the Muppet movie. Got it.
Yes.
When Kermit is down there on the log.
Of course. Yeah. I would be Dom DeLuise. I would risk getting eaten by a weird alligator Muppet, sure.
Of course. What fictional character would you like to meet the least, though?
Thought a bit about it. Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver, for a lot of reasons. I think even if he wasn't trying to kill me, there's just a lot of other skeevy things. I'm just like, I don't want to be around you. And unfortunately, okay, he feels very realistic to some of the skeevy people you might meet in that toxic fan community.
Yes, just wait till next week at Dragon.
Of course.
Of course. All right, Adam, same question.
Buffalo Bill from Science of Lambs? Good Lord.
Either he puts the lotion on.
Or Anton from No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, okay.
I don't want to talk to that guy.
Oh, no.
Nope.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, or quote, or pose?
I really, really dig the classic, I must not fear, fear is the mind killer from Dune.
Oh, very cool.
Dune is one of my absolute favorite stories of all time. And that one always stuck with me as a, even when I read it as a teenager and even now through all the movies, the miniseries, and hopefully the new one. So that's, sure, probably, that's probably my favorite.
Okay. Thomas?
Ever since I was one of the few people, kids amongst my age group to see this in the theater, this mantra has been, this quote has been my mantra from The Iron Giant, you are who you choose to be. I feel like that really shaped me as a young kid in terms of saying, like, it's not really about where you come from or about what you're perceived to be. It's what you ultimately want to do in life. That is what you choose to be. That is who you are. And I think that's been a guiding principle that I try to live by every day.
No, totally see that. I truly, truly see that. No, that's a good one, actually. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Especially in terms of like just a fictional pie in the sky one, one that I would love is to be like an Ollivander from the Harry Potter series. To be not necessarily the guy who does the magic, but helps sort of the guiding force for someone who's coming into magic to find the right fit for them in terms of something like a wand, which is a personal item that really affects who you are in this like huge magical sphere. It's this piece of individuality that sort of beckons to you. I would love to be the guy to sort of pass that to somebody.
Oh, sure. You would be like almost like the mentor, the person who like guides them towards where they need to go.
Well, not necessarily a mentor. It's just like, here's the wand, go away. Like, I don't have to do the go tough away stuff.
Okay. 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 No parenting skills. Got it.
I'm more like an uncle. Just like, here you go, kid. Bye. Go to your parents.
Okay. What about you, Adam?
I want to be like Indiana Jones, man. An international adventurer / architect. Like, I mean, was there anybody cooler or tougher than Indiana Jones?
No, definitely not. I think that's awesome. No, Indiana Jones did it, and he built great buildings, too, as an architect.
Yes, I'm sure he did.
Okay. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
I don't want to clean out that, like, watery trash pit on the Death Star. I don't want to go down there. Like, especially there's, like, a one-eyed Cyclops monster down there. God knows what's going on with that thing. Yeah, I know. Keep me out of there.
So no to the janitor on the Death Star. Got it.
Yeah, right. Well, okay. Yeah. Especially because you'd be working on the Death Star when it blows up. So ultimately, you're just going to die.
Well, yeah, pretty much, unless you're on vacation that day.
That's true.
Exactly. All right, Thomas.
Well, for me, admittedly, this is also Star Wars related and even Death Star Empire related, but I think one that goes underrated in terms of like the really bad jobs is being one of the Red Emperor guards in Return of the Jedi specifically, because all you're doing all day is just standing in front of one door and your only company is this dude who like sits in a chair and looks at a giant window. And maybe if he does talk to you, it's just like, so you like the Empire? You like it? And you're just standing there just like, oh God, I'm wearing this awful thing and I can't take it off and I can barely move in it. This is so terrible. And then the one moment where you might have like some kind of fun is like, oh crap, Luke Skywalker's here and he's going to have the best, like, arguably lightsaber fight of all time, and the Emperor's like, leave. There's no windows in there for to see that shit.
I love that Palpatine talks up his guards.
What else is he going to do in there, Adam?
That Darth Vader's a cool dude, right?
Wow. Okay. All right, guys, this is your final question. I'll let you guys decide who wants to go first on this one. What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Adam, go ahead. You started this off. You might as well be the last.
Yeah. Are we talking like if I could be involved in like a fandom or something that I would, well, I guess you said that's up to us.
Yeah, it is up to you.
I would really like.
We say mum. That's it.
Gotcha. I would really, really like to have my own space in like my own house where I could own props and costumes and scripts from all the movies I love and have them on display and just be able to sit there and look at them and think about the history of where they came from and things like that, like something tangible to hold.
Well, sure. Well, you know, you'll be able to do that with all the podcast money you're going to be making.
Yeah. Yep. Can't wait for the checks to roll in. Oh, damn it. They figured us out, Thomas. Oh,
damn.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We knew it. Ha! Okay, Thomas, what's your answer?
I would love the ability to, even if just once, to be able to travel back in time and specifically be on the set of like a super famous movie. I'm thinking something like, you know, A Wizard of Oz or something like that, that just has like the most gorgeous, like elaborate sets and has some of the most interesting people on that set. Even if it's not necessarily that movie, it could be something as small and intimate as something like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, or just like some kind of, I would love to be on one of those sets where like it might be kind of cantankerous. I don't want to be necessarily a PA doing a job, but I want to be a fly on the wall for them shooting like either a famous scene or just hanging out together, whatever the movie might be, or something that, like I said, has some gorgeous elaborate special effect. Like my favorite movie of all time is the 1986 Little Shop of Horrors. And I would love to be on the set where that amazing practical effect, arguably to me, the best practical effect of all time, Audrey 2, just standing there. I would love to be just in the room where all of that magic happens.
No, totally understand that. I think that's pretty awesome. That is a great answer, actually. Well, very cool. Well, Adam, Thomas, you've made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations.
I have so many people to thank. Oh,
God. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young men what they've won other than being part of the ESO
Network.
Well,
that's a winning award. You know, what else could there be? But you have also won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, which you are now part of. A value easily worth $26.09.
Wow, these guys have pushed our value all the way through the sky.
All right. Yeah. Now, do we have to split that $26?
Don't they know that the money's only worth something on the station?
Yeah, they'll find out. They'll find out. Yeah,
these are Disney dollars? Damn it.
Bingo!
It's a station currency. It drops in value as the closer you get to the Earth.
Damn monopoly money!
So,
well, thanks for having us on, guys. Thanks for letting us.
Thanks a lot.
People, you know, obviously they can go to the ESO Network website to check out the new episodes. But you guys have a presence as well. Where should they go and check you guys out?
Well, we are at DEDB Pod in terms of the podcast itself on Facebook and Twitter. Every Monday we put out a feeler for anybody who likes the page to comment or reply, depending on what platform you're using, and to the questionnaire of like, what's your favorite, least favorite thing related to whatever topic that we're doing at the time. We also are on individual platforms. I'm on at Not the Who's Tommy on Twitter. That's where I do a lot of my musings on my own. I also do writing at my blog, ismarianithomas.wordpress.com, and I do some satiric, onion-like superhero news reporting at truesuperheronewsonly.com. I, for example, just put up an article about how Bradley Cooper will be performing Rocket Raccoon as Jackson Maine from A Star Is Born. That's my scoop that I just put out today as a satiric fun bit. So only truesuperherofans.com.
Excellent. Well,
I'm literally not anywhere. I have a
place. At least he's honest about it. Come on.
Yeah. Stay off the radar. Stay off the radar.
Technology. Yep. Off the grid.
Off the grid. That's right. All right. Well, very cool. Well, thanks guys for joining us. And we'll have links to all of that in the show notes.
Thanks guys.
Thanks.
Welcome aboard. It's great to have you guys going to the network now. And let's take a quick break. And we'll be back in a moment. And we are going to be talking all about Woodstock.
It's getting to the point where I'm...
Everyone these days could use a little support. And your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the Geek Seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
For those of you who have forgotten, for those of you who haven't forgotten, and for those of you who never knew. By the time we got to Woodstock. Woodstock, an incredible film about an incredible event, is back. Everywhere was a song and a celebration.
Man, there's supposed to be 1.5 million people here by tonight. Can you dig that?
It's really amazing, man. It looks like some kind of biblical, epical, unbelievable scene.
Woodstock, with a cast of 500,000 outrageously friendly people.
Do you want me to explain it in plain English?
It's a dirty mess.
Woodstock, the people, the vibes, the music.
Swing low, sweet.
Owned by Joe Cock, Country Joe, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Richie, Jimi Hendrix, and John Sebastian, Sean Knopf, Sly, and the Family Stone, The Who.
Woodstock, where it all began.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Earth Station 1. It's time to go back in time to August 15th through the 17th of 1969. And we are going up to White Lake, New York, and we are going to be talking all about Woodstock.
Yes, Woodstock turns 50. It's been the 50th anniversary just this past weekend as we're recording this. And we're going to talk all about it. We've got with us, of course, our music crew. Michelle is here.
Hi.
And we've got Ricky and Bambi joining us as
Hello.
Well.
Hello. Hello. Meow, meow.
So now the way I'll start this is with, you know, there was only one person who's on this recording that was actually there, Mike. So I'm going to start with you. And tell us, what do you actually, I mean, you were 2, right?
I was 2 years old.
Do you actually remember anything about this?
Not a thing.
Okay. So we can, it's a well-established, and you know what?
But,
probably a lot of the 400,000 people are just like you. They don't remember.
Well,
a lot of them had the brown acid, right?
Of course. Well, my family was there also, not just my mom and dad, but I had aunts and uncles at the concert, because I actually grew up 1.5 miles from where Woodstock took place.
Gotcha.
The actual concert. And so for me, it was always, you know, oh, that's where that concert was. This is what when all the people were there. We heard about it from all the time I can start remembering. It was always, oh, right down that street is where Woodstock was. And, you know, where Yasker's Farm was. And it was literally every day and hearing the story. And then when the movie came out, being able to see people in that movie that I knew and, you know, growing up. And, you know, so it became, you know, that and everything. And it's funny how you said, but people at the concert who, you know, half of them don't even remember the concert itself. My uncle, who was at the concert, says, if somebody says they remember Woodstock, they were not at Woodstock.
right. So what about, so the stories that you were told from your family, from your parents in particular, was it something that was a special moment for them?
Oh, of course. It was magic. And, you know, it was magic in a disaster area. Woodstock was the concert that should have failed so many different ways. And we'll talk all about that in a little bit. And because I want to hear what everyone else has to say about it. But, you know, it was my family, you know, my parents especially, they were like, it was, you know, they were close enough that they could hear the music, but the stage literally, you know, they were 1 of 400,000 people. The stage was probably the size of a matchbox car to them. and they did the camping and everybody there did the camping and everything. We didn't go back to our house or anything because it was almost impossible to get back to the house.
I was going to say, going to and from was just not possible.
No, it wasn't. It was almost impossible to leave the area. And, you know, it was just, you know, talking to my grandmother and because, you know, the house we had there was a family house. It was all our family that was there. And it was, you know, my grandparents were there. My aunt and uncles were there. My aunt, who was 10 years old, was too young to go to Woodstock. And so her parents, of course, didn't let her, but everyone else did. My uncle, Ed, was one of the vendors at Woodstock. He was selling jewelry. And, you know, now, you know, he was selling hippie jewelry back then. Now he has a gallery on Fifth Avenue selling jewelry. And wow. So it's pretty, you know, it's neat to see how people evolve. I mean, my Uncle Roy, who was, you know, at there, I think he was 17 at the time. He, you know, he was, you know, now he's a born again Jehovah's Witness and, you know, but he still talks about it and everything. So it's pretty cool to see how different people evolve.
Before we move on to everybody else, just one last question. Do you, or is there anything in the family that you guys have that you, that was acquired at Woodstock, either original tickets or posters or anything that you guys have from the event?
I have in my house a framed original poster.
Did it come from like there or did you just get it, acquire it later?
No, my family passed it down. They got it, you know, at the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because it said White Lake, New York, and they were all, oh, this sounds awesome and everything, and, you know, and type thing. So it's pretty awesome to, you know, see it. So, yeah, I got it because it was my parents. And then when my parents passed away, I inherited it. And so I have it now and it's sitting in my house up on the wall.
Awesome. Awesome. So, Michelle, what does Woodstock mean to you?
Well, before this past weekend, it just meant a big show that happened a long time ago. And now I look at it as sort of this wonderful little bubble in American history and music history, something that could never be replicated. It was just something very pretty and unique. And when its time was done, it burst.
It was like almost a, I don't want to say a perfect storm. I mean, there was storms happening, obviously. And there was a lot about it that wasn't perfect. Obviously, there was a lot of things that went wrong. But yet, like, some real, like, beauty came out of it.
Yeah.
Which is amazing to think of. I think, yeah. I mean, obviously, you and I were both alive at the time. But, like Mike, I was too young. It wasn't even on my radar. And my parents were not the kind of parents that would have even thought about it. Oh my God. It would not even occurred to them to go to Woodstock. Not at all.
Or mine.
So, although they did go to they have their honeymoon at the New York World's Fair. I always thought that was cool.
There's a big difference, though, between Woodstock and the New York World's Fair.
No, I know. I just think, you know, as far as adventurers of my parents, you know, they had a little bit of adventure in them. But anyway, Bambi, what about you? What does Woodstock mean to you?
Well, Woodstock, again, I guess with a lot of things like the Beatles, it was always just around. I was always familiar with it without actually knowing what it was. Just as a little kid, it was just a word that meant something. Usually it seemed to go along with hippies, though.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a little kid, anytime somebody would be talking about Woodstock, it would be usually talking about hippies. And that's kind of where I learned what hippies were. Not very interesting, but there we go.
No, absolutely.
No, it's very interesting, actually, because everyone has their own input, what it means to them.
Yeah. And it's amazing to see, or, you know, it's interesting to see also like over the years, you know, how like Woodstock is, whether or not the message is still there, you know, whether or not it does mean what it meant at the time and for people who were there and whether or not the legacy of Woodstock will live on. I think it will to a large degree, but as far, you know, as we're losing more and more people who were actually there, it's going to be interesting to see that transition, although I don't know if I'll be able to actually see that transition myself, but you know, at the end of it anyway. Ricky, what about you?
I don't remember when I first heard about Woodstock. It's one of those things that I kind of always remember knowing something about, but I didn't know much about it until I got into music myself. And I think seeing the posters, there's a famous poster that's a hand on a guitar neck with a bird. Mm-hmm. And it says something like 3 days of peace, love, and music.
That's the poster I have.
And it kind of, when I first saw the poster and first started understanding who was there and really what Woodstock meant, it was cool. But as I got older and as I learned more about it, and as I saw some of the performances from people and heard some of the stories that the musicians told about the event, I realized that it really was a more unique event, a more special occasion than I had originally understood it to be. So over time, my impression of Woodstock has changed greatly, but I don't remember when I first heard about it. It just is one of those things that seems like it's always been part of the collective consciousness.
It's amazing to me. And I look at the poster of what was billed, you know, what was advertised, because the poster was, you know, everywhere, at least as far as the counterculture went. That's what attracted so many people, was, you know, the fact that it lived up to the 3 days of peace and music is amazing in and of itself with everything that else happened. And there was a lot of things on that poster that did not work. Like there's a lot of the bands that did not actually appear that were first, you know, promoted as being there, like the Moody Blues and whatnot. And obviously it had to change venues, like I think what, Mike, 3-4 times before it actually got to Bethel, right?
Exactly. It actually, well, originally it started as a small little show up in Woodstock itself. That's where it originally got the name, because the founders were trying to start a music studio up there. And they had found out, they had agreed to get Bob Dylan and a couple other bands that were based out of Woodstock at the time. But the co-founders of the concert, the guys who were funding it, said, hey, we could make more money by just doing a concert. And they found this town called Walk Hill, New York. And they got all the permits for it. And they, you know, told them, hey, there's going to be probably like 100,000 people coming to this concert, possibly. And they had all these bands signed up, and they started doing construction on it, on this really ugly piece of land, which was going to eventually become an office park. And it basically, they started running electricity out to it and running water, sewage, and they started doing the construction on for vendors and for buildings and such. And pretty much a month and a half before the concert was due to start, people like churchgoers and a lot of conservatives basically went to the town and said, hey, we don't want these hippies coming to our town. You know, you're going to lose our support if you guys, you know, let this go on. So the town of Walk Hill passed a, you know, basically a resolution saying that they could only have 5,000 people at the most at a gathering in the city limits. And the piece of property was in the city limits. So basically Woodstock, the founders of it, Michael Lang, Artie Cornfield, Joel and John, they basically all were like, we've got to cancel this thing. And, you know, it made news in the newspapers because they had already sold tickets for this concert. They had already created the posters for it. You could actually get, you know, somewhere out there, the poster that Ricky was talking about, that actually is the same poster, but it says Walk Hill, New York in it. You know, those are really limited edition and worth a lot of money. But this guy named Max Yasker, who lived up out in Bethel, New York, which was about 50 miles away from the original location, and said, hey, I have this farm, and if you guys want it, you guys can, you know, check it out and do it. And the rest is history.
So I want to talk about also the, well, I mean, there's so much to talk about, but I want to focus a bit on the music, because obviously that was the sort of the spine of the event, right? Is everybody came to see the musicians. There were 3 days of musicians, and actually a lot of it is captured in the documentary film, the 1970 documentary movie. Not everything, obviously. Not even every artist appears in that film.
No, there's bands there that you wouldn't even know that were at Woodstock because of the movie. Because there's so many
if you've only seen the movie, then there's a lot of bands that you're missing out on as far as that were there, sure. But as far as the maybe what you've heard or what you actually seen from the movies or whatnot, I'm just kind of curious as to what performance or artist that you guys think maybe was exceptional during that weekend. Michelle, I guess we'll start with you. Who jumps out at you as sort of like it was an amazing event for them as far as an artist?
Joan Baez just sounded so beautiful, just commanding that stage all by herself with the power of her voice. It was really...
Well, she was pregnant, so it was literally like two of her.
Okay.
It was two people.
Her and the baby. Yeah, yeah. Commanding that just on their own, and it was just very beautiful. Richie Havens ad-libbing that whole long piece with so much power and abandon, that was incredible.
It was just amazing that freedom, he came up with it right there on the spot, and that song actually defined him for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
And Crosby, Stills, and Nash, second time they'd ever played together. They were scared shitless, and they sounded perfect. And I think Graham Nash said later he was completely high.
Oh, all of them were. Come on.
I think even if they weren't set out to be, my understanding is that you got a contact high just being like a mile within like the place.
But he made special note of how high he was, but they sounded just spot on perfect.
Bambi, have you seen any of the performances? Is there any sort of act that stands out for you?
Well, I've heard, I think it's the Janis Joplin recording. Mm-hmm. I've heard that one. I think it was CCR. I think I heard a recording, and I'm almost positive the photo that is so famous that I know of Jimi Hendrix was there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think it's it was at Woodstock where his guitar's on fire.
No, that was at Monterey Pop.
Yeah,
it was
Monterey Pop was the guitar. But where he did the the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, was at Woodstock.
Yes.
That's why I always thought that photo was from Woodstock. But
The way you could tell is that was in the dark. That was on stage in the dark. But Jimi Hendrix closed the show Monday morning. So he played from 9 a.m. to 11. Unfortunately, like everybody was leaving at the time. So there was only out of the, like the 500,000 people that were there during the weekend, only about under like 50,000 people actually saw Jimi Hendrix play.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause after the rainstorm, a huge amount of the folks left the concert.
Yeah. I mean, they had to get back. They had to start like planning to leave. 'Cause you knew it was going to take like hours to get out of there.
Yeah.
And as soon as Sean and I hit, they were like, okay, that's time to go.
Well, Sean and I hit right before Jimi Hendrix.
I know. That's what I was saying. Like, Sean and I scared everybody away. They're like, okay, we could leave now. And then Jimi Hendrix comes on and blows everybody away for 2 hours. Mm-hmm.
Well, the funny thing with Sean and I was that they weren't even, you know, supposed to be there. And Jimi Hendrix basically said, if you want me there, you have to have Sean and I.
Wow.
Because he was like having Sean and I at the time was opening for him.
I see.
And so it was like, take me and have this band with us. And everyone was like, are we still tripping on acid? There's a 50s band up there.
Yeah. It was a weird mix. I mean, it wasn't like, I think Friday was the folk day. So everybody was really kind of focused on the sort of acoustic set
on Friday. Saturday was more, you know, getting into rock. Santana probably was the first, like, really, like, outstanding rock artist there. And then you've got Canned Heat and, of course, The Dead and CCR and Janis Joplin. Sly and the Family Stone goes another direction. Then The Who comes on with Jefferson Airplane in the morning. It's just like, yeah, everybody wakes up to 8 a.m. to Jefferson Airplane. That's pretty amazing.
It was so interesting because they were so far behind. And that's why Jefferson Airplane started at dawn, you know, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I kind of CCR is kind of mad, because they were originally supposed to be on like much earlier and they came on really late. I heard that they don't really have great things to say about their Woodstock appearance. So, but I can understand that, because the pictures that I've seen of him, John Fogerty has a bowl cut, and I would not want that preserved for eternity. I know that my mom gave me a bowl cut when I was little, and I'm glad that those pictures aren't really out there on Facebook.
And then your mom probably went, "Michael, you'll look just like John Fogerty."
No, she had no idea who John Fogerty was. She had no idea who John Fogerty was. She would probably say I would look more like Engelbert Humperdinck.
Wow.
So Barry Manilow, that was more her speed. Okay, so Ricky, what about you? What about any sort of performances that we haven't mentioned, or anything musically that wouldn't happen the weekend that got your attention?
Well, definitely Joe Cocker.
Joe Cocker's
performance was that's probably, when I think of Joe Cocker, what I think of is his performance at Woodstock. The Who and Hendrix is another, well, The Who's performance in general and Hendrix's performance in general, I think are some of the performances that stand out the most when I think of the festival.
Yeah, doing the looking around and the research, you know, I can find, of course, there's the movie, the 4-hour movie. But outside of that, and some various home movies and some, you know, footage taken by, you know, reporters at the time, there's not like, it's not like you can just go and watch The Who's complete set.
But you can listen to it now.
Yes, you can listen to it, right? Is the audio for all 3 days, like everything, available now?
Well, basically, our friends at Rhino Records, for the 50th anniversary, put out 1,969 copies of a 37-disc set.
Wow.
Which is the whole concert, not just the music, all the stage announcements, everything from the very first thing to the end after Hendrix played.
That's wow. Awesome. So it's like you're right there.
It sold out in 20 minutes.
Wow.
It was selling for $800.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Dude, it was, everything was
re- so you bought three?
Of course I did. I used our Patreon money. What do you mean?
Yeah, I was going to say, you bought us all a copy, right?
Of course. Surprise! No. I would love to have gotten a copy of that. It was, you know, it's just amazing what they did, because I listened to a podcast called All Songs Considered, and it's from NPR, and they actually interviewed the guy who remastered everything. Because there's certain bands up there that, you know, the sound system was not built for 500,000 people at Woodstock. And so, you know, basically it was people who were on the upper end of the bowl and further back could barely hear anything. You could hear like almost like background noise of the music playing. But they took, somebody had it in their withal to tape the whole concert. You know, to do record everything. And he found them in a warehouse somewhere.
Well, it's just probably those people that follow The Dead around, because they're always making tapes of The Dead everywhere. Mm. Like,
The Dead was another band that just has not good things to say about Woodstock.
Oh, really?
Because they...
Yeah, you don't see them perform in the movie, but you do see Jerry, like, smoking a joint.
Well, yeah. you could hear, you know, you see Jerry, you see them getting off the helicopter, so you know they're there. But the problem was, The Dead always traveled with their own sound system. And they basically their sound system was not compatible with the Woodstock sound system they had. And so it was also after they performed, right after one of the rainstorms they had, because you saw the big thunderstorm and everything that happened on Sunday. But when the Dead played, it was after a slight rainstorm. And like we had mentioned earlier in the show, they had to rush to put this thing together. They barely got the stage together, and the stage didn't even work. Right. You know, they built this huge, awesome, like modern, like turntable system for the stage, where they'd be able to have one band setting up while another band played. And then they'd be able to turn the turntable and move the gear, you know, right there. And yeah, it broke within the first 5 minutes of the show. And it didn't work for the rest of the show.
You know, if it's going to break when they're setting up folk singers, it's not going to work for the rock and roll.
Exactly. Well, exactly. And so that, you know, they just didn't have the time to do it. So when they did that, they weren't able to bury the electrical cables. And so with the rain, they had exposed wires and cables and everything. They weren't able to chain up the sound towers and the light towers that you see in the concert that people are climbing up on and everything. And so, like I said earlier, this is the show that should not have worked. There should have been so many disasters. And, you know, there's a great, you know, interview with the Dead, and I think it was with Bob Weir, who's one of the lead singers. And he was saying when they got up there to play, because stuff was not grounded, when he went to go touch the microphone, it shot, you saw electricity come off of it. Kept on shocking him. And that's where they based the scene from in the movie Almost Famous, when the lead singer, the band there, grabbed the microphone and was going to sing, and he got electrocuted. And that's based off of what happened at Woodstock. And so there was all these different things. And so the Dead was having issues playing their sound, their instruments and singing. And so songs that were supposed to go like 20 minutes, like the typical Grateful Dead songs, were going 2 minutes. And then they had dead time because they were trying to figure out the sound system, and they had to banter with the audience. It's just, and you could hear all the stuff on the CDs, which is pretty cool, the new ones. But, you know, for those folks out there with the CDs, there's no way to get the 37 disc set anymore. But they do have a 10 disc set that is put out by Rhino also. And that's not limited edition. I think it's like $110 on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And it has all the music from every band. It just doesn't have like the banter, the announcements, and all gotcha. Everything between it. But if you want to hear the Jefferson Airplane's whole set, you get this. And it's just amazing what they have. And, you know, and like you had mentioned earlier, who the most amazing bands to come out of this, I have to say probably was Santana.
You know, Santana really opened a lot of people's eyes, because a lot of people on the East Coast had not seen them before.
Santana hadn't even released an album yet. Yeah, their album didn't come out for another 5 months.
There were a lot of people that were just like, what is happening? Who is this guy?
Well,
the drummer.
Exactly.
The baby drummer, yes.
Exactly. And the funny thing with it is Santana wasn't originally supposed to be there. It was originally supposed to be Chicago Transit Authority in their spot. Just like
that guy from Clerks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a lot of people that weren't supposed to be there.
Right, but Bill Graham.
John Sebastian appeared after Santana wasn't supposed to perform either.
Well, yeah, because John Sebastian had just broken up with the Loving Spoonful.
He was just there.
He was just at the concert. Exactly.
Like, we had some time to get, because there was a lot of problems logistically, because they were having a lot of problems getting people, like artists, to and from like the stage from where they were staying at the hotels and whatnot. So they had to fly him in. But of course, that logistically added a lot of delays. So, well,
exactly. And there was also,
because I don't think Richie Havens was supposed to start.
No, I think, Sweetwater was supposed to go first.
Yeah, but he was there, and he didn't even have his whole band with him. But they were just like, just go out and do something. So he was out there for 2 hours when he was just making up songs.
They literally, every time he tried to get off the stage, they said, can you do another encore? Can you do another encore?
He's like, I've run out of material, so I'll just make up a song. And then he made up a song that he's known for now, that is classic. So
exactly.
I'm really curious to hear. Now, usually when we, you know, spotlight a band, I like to ask, you know, get the musician's opinion of some of the songs that they, that the band's known for, et cetera, et cetera. But because this is an event, and I know that, you know, you guys have played, Ricky and Bambi, you guys have played outdoors before. You've played festivals, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously nothing this big, but can you even imagine playing a festival like this?
Well, to put it into perspective, a lot of people have seen the video for Queen at Wembley. Woodstock is 5 times the size of Queen at Wembley.
Right.
5 times as many people. Now, Queen at Wembley was huge. So to think that this was that much bigger is just mind blowing to me.
Yeah.
We've never played to as many people as Queen at Wembley. so trying to imagine playing to 500,000 people is that's a lot of people.
Yeah. We have experienced the getting shocked from the microphones though.
Yes. We have a lot of experience with that.
That happens way more than it should.
Yes.
Ouch. I can only imagine, and you know, obviously with the conditions, whether it's raining or whether it's just hot, it's just playing outdoors allows probably a lot more of things you have to be mindful of, right?
Yes.
And people don't understand, the effect of water on a band. All the time we have shows that are outdoor shows after it's rained. And people say, well, I think it's done raining. You'll be fine. Go on out and set up. And they don't understand. We have electrical cables running on the ground and you've got, you know, 3 inches of water over there. There's kind of an issue.
Yeah. There's usually the, if it does rain, it'll just rain for a minute. It won't be a big deal. It's like, it only takes a minute to destroy everything.
Yeah. We have been set up, as a hurricane was coming through.
Oh yeah. Oh, what was that?
And we've been set up as a tornado was coming through.
I was thinking on the Myrtle Beach. We did a thing on the pier in Myrtle
Beach. Tybee Island.
Yeah. When a storm was coming in and whoo, that destroyed some stuff.
Yeah. It's amazing how quickly water can come in and just destroy your gear. So knowing that Woodstock was, just kind of thrown together, the stage and the PA and all the electrical, and also knowing that this is relatively new territory in the late 60s in terms of having a PA system that's a big PA, certainly a PA system that's this big, combined with all of the last minute thrown together construction and the rain, I just can't even imagine trying to perform under those conditions. Oh, yeah. Forget about the 400,000 people, just the logistics of the stage and the wiring and the rain all combined, it would have been really tough. And I can understand how some of the bands would have maybe felt like it was the best experience of their lives and how other bands may have felt like it was one of the worst.
Yeah, I can understand why some of them would say, I'm not going to play in the rain. I'm going to wait till it stops.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, it's like it could be a missed opportunity, but you never know. I don't think anybody knew that Woodstock was going to be as big as it was.
Well, as lasting.
Or as lasting, yeah.
Well, of course, because there were other, you know, there were other festivals, but a lot of them you don't hear about. A month before this festival, there was a festival very similar in Atlanta, actually, at the Atlanta Speedway, down where now, I think, what is it, Hi-Fi Buys or whatever the Lakewood area is. And they basically had Joe Cocker, Joan Baez, a lot of the other bands. They even had Led Zeppelin at that, you know, at that festival.
But there was something about, I mean, and Monterey, you know, was a thing back then too. And there was one in Miami, but I think the thing about Woodstock that makes it so special at the time, obviously the bands and the music is amazing, right? So there's that element that we just talked about. But I think what makes Woodstock Woodstock is what happened, like, outside of the music experience. It wasn't just a concert, because as Mike pointed out, there were other shows, Woodstock wasn't the first outdoor show. It wasn't even, like, in the history, it hasn't even been the biggest outdoor show. But there is the fact that, at the time in the '60s, whenever you got young people together, like the show in Miami, like the one in Atlanta, there was violence. There was a huge cop presence, and then people got hurt. A lot of people got hurt. The Monterey one in California was very corporate. You just pay your ticket, you know, you pay your money, go sit down and have a good time, watch music, and then you leave. This was billed as an event. Like, you didn't just go to the venue and then the music was done, and then you went back to your hotels and then went back to the venue the next day or anything. You're going to stay there, and it was just going to be a weekend, a whole experience. Instead of hiring cops, they hired, what was it called? The Hog Farm?
Yes.
To take care of, you know, security and other needs that people had. And even though that seemed insane at the time, because why would you hire someone like that was named Wavy Gravy to be in charge of your security, right? That just sounds like it's going to, like Mike said, there's so many things that, like, why did you do this? This is going to fail, right? But yet it was the best move, because I swear if you had had cops there, like legitimate, like, presence of police force that was going to, you know, enforce things like drugs and drug use and all that kind of stuff, this would have been a nightmare. Like, this would have been one of the, like a stain on American history. Right?
Oh, exactly. It, like I keep on saying, it should have not worked, but it did.
Yeah.
And, you know, because literally, what was it, 4 months later, they had Altamont.
Right.
And that's where they hired instead of the Hog Farm, they hired the Hell's Angels as a security guard.
Yeah.
And that was a true disaster.
It's almost one of those things that it's like violence begets violence, right? Like, if you hire, like, police force or Hell's Angels or something like that, you're just expecting trouble. Like, if you expect trouble, there's going to be trouble. Like, it's going to live up to that. But
you always see what you're looking for.
Yeah. But with an event like this, and I think it's amazing because, you know, I don't know exactly why people felt compelled. So many people felt compelled to come to this. I mean, it was a good show. Like, it was nicely billed and everything like that. But there was something about the timing of it that attracted, because they thought, you know, they sold about, what, 100,000 to 150,000 tickets. They thought maybe they would get 200,000 people there. Mm-hmm. They got, like, over twice that.
Well, exactly. And part of the problem was also people started showing up to the site and started camping on site a week and a half before the concert was supposed to start.
Sure.
It's like getting to Dragon Con now and sitting in the lobby and waiting and everything. And literally, and they, you know, there was already probably about 40,000 people that just showed up. And, you know, they hadn't even put up the fences yet. And what are they going to say? Excuse me, can you leave so we can put up fences? No, you couldn't do that.
Yeah, they just didn't have the time. I mean, as they got down to, like, the wire, they were like, we can either spend the time and money working on the stage or working on the fence. And they worked on the stage because that was more important to them. And then they very quickly, within the first day, they realized they can't keep up with this. They can't, like they can't enforce the ticket thing. So it's just going to be a 3-day free concert. But I don't think, it's not like everybody could text everybody and say, hey, it's free, come on down. I mean, everybody was already there.
You know? Or on their way.
Yeah, or on their way. And that's the other thing. When you watch the documentary, great documentary that was done by PBS, American Experience, that is available on Netflix. I recommend everybody check it out. If you can't devote 4 hours to watching the concert documentary, watch the hour and a half documentary that's on Netflix, because it's really awesome. But it's really well put together. But that's the kind of thing that I look at and I'm like, man, this is amazing. This is why Woodstock is Woodstock and why it can never be created. Cause there's going to be, you know, there's music festivals all the time. And I think the biggest ones in the country are what, Bonnaroo. And then what's the one in California? Begins with a C.
Oh, Coachella.
Yeah. Coachella. Right. Cause Coachella, didn't Beyonce get like a million people at that one or something? It was huge, right? It was way bigger.
I don't think she got a million.
But I think the numbers were bigger than say like Woodstock, but it was also more organized. You know, that's why you can't do Woodstock again, even though they thought about it, because it's just something that it just happened. Like, and now it's like it would be corporate sponsored. There'd be tickets enforced. It would just be, it just wouldn't have the same, like in what's going on in the country. It just wouldn't be the same. Right.
Right. No, it was the perfect time, the perfect place, everything. There was just so much positive. They ran out of food on Saturday of the concert. Yeah. And literally the people in Monticello and Bethel, White Lake area, people went from their own houses and they donated food for the people, farmers from around the area. Hard-boiled eggs, and sent them dozens and dozens and dozens of hard-boiled eggs to feed these people. It's just amazing.
And even though the governor at the time was freaking out and thought, you know, declared it a disaster area, and they were going to send, you know, the military in, I'm glad that they came to the agreement to only send the helicopters in to bring in supplies. Because I can only imagine, like, if you're sitting there enjoying the concert, especially if you're on LSD, like, and you see army helicopters coming in, like, that would just completely freak you out. Not to mention ruin your buzz.
especially at that time in American history.
Absolutely. I mean, all these kids are they've got the shadow of Vietnam right there on them. Right.
Oh, exactly. You know, you would think, oh my God, the army is coming to get us. But actually, the military actually sent doctors to help with it.
Yeah. They, instead of, you know, they somehow convinced them, don't send the military. Don't send, we don't want, you know, the army here. Just send us doctors. That's what we need. Send us food. Carry the food here. That's what we need. And that was a smart play. Cause again, that's another way it could have gone horribly wrong. Getting ready to wind down. So much still more to talk about, but I wanted to ask you guys before we get out of here, I want to ask, so we'll start with you, Michelle. So looking back on it now, and I mean, I know that you were around back then, but looking back on it now, if you could, would you attend Woodstock? Like if you had the opportunity to get in the TARDIS, would you attend Woodstock? Would you like, let's say, hey doc, let's go to the Woodstock.
Wow.
It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. In the rain and the mud.
Yeah. And the smell.
And the smell. That's
what I was thinking. Even imagine how it smelled.
My uncle says that's what he remembers the most from it.
I bet that place still kind of reeks.
No. Actually, it's wonderful what they've done there. I'll tell you about that in a minute.
It's on the National Register of Historic
as of 2017.
It's a hard thing to say because I am the product of a different time and place and mentality. And as much as I admire what I saw this weekend on screen, being there would be really different. I guess I would say yes if I could if I knew I could get out.
If you knew I had a TARDIS there,
if I didn't have to hike to my car,
quickly go and have a nap and a shower. But Ricky and Bambi, do you wish you could go?
Oh, definitely not.
Would you like to perform at Woodstock?
If I were going, well, one of the things that I was going to say is I think one of the biggest things that set Woodstock apart from every other festival was the movie. And if I could perform and know that my part of my performance would be remembered in the movie, then I might go through all of the anguish of being there to be memorialized that way. But in terms of enjoying the festival, I think it would have been not my kind of experience in any way. I mean, we've talked about the rain on the stage and the fact that the stage was thrown together last minute and people were getting shocked up there, and the technology in 1969 was not what it is today. I think that it would have been a very difficult show despite the number of people. Now, if you could take me there in a TARDIS and I could,
that's what I was thinking.
And I would get an opportunity to ride in a TARDIS. That would be a big part of the appeal.
First thing I thought.
So it's kind of a, do you want to play Woodstock? No, you get to ride in the TARDIS. Okay. All right. I'll do it. But as amazing as Woodstock is, as amazing as it is to look back on it, and as much as I've enjoyed watching the performances from some of these great artists, no, I wouldn't enjoy being there at all.
Yeah. Okay. I have mixed about it. It's like part of me would love to be there and witness how they put this together. I mean, I'm just looking at photos while we're talking and just looking at the sound rig. I imagine the front row was visually awesome, but I bet you couldn't hear crap because it was so loud. You know, just the way that it's set up, you probably couldn't hear anything really close to the stage, but it would look neat. And so it's like,
you would also be stoned off your ass because of all the smell.
Yeah. Like all the musicians, I don't see monitors. I'm trying to find where they have monitors. Maybe I just haven't found a photo of it yet, but I'm like,
they must have had monitors because at one point in the concert, I can't remember who was performing, but they actually kind of like motioned to somebody like, I can't hear. Like, so they were, I think it was during the Crosby, Stills and Nash. Like one of them was like, you need to turn this thing down or something like that. Like he was motioning. So they must've been able to hear it somewhat. You
know? Yeah. They may
have had side fills.
Yeah. But you also had the monitoring system go down because that's what happened with Blood, Sweat and Tears. That's why you've never heard them in an album before, because of the, you know, the lack of monitor, the horns couldn't hear each other and such, but you know, with the remastered version, they have, you know, synced up the horns and everything, and it sounds better than they said that it did at Woodstock.
Yeah, I do wonder if, like, watching the movie, that the all the audio is pumped up enough so and you know, doctored enough that it sounds a lot better than it did at the show. So,
if I could stop in and leave, like, shortly after, whenever I wanted, not have to hang around and deal with the smell and the just grossness of that many people being together.
Not to mention, like, every other person is buck naked.
I do think me at the age I am now probably views it a lot differently than I would have at 16.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like 50-year-old me, no way. I'd just be like, I'll just watch it on, you know, streaming, whatever, right? But you know, like 17, 18, 20, 21 year old me, like, yeah, that would have been pretty awesome. I think I would have, I did things that were really dumb. Like that I can't brag about like I could if I had been to Woodstock. So
I've done so many things musically, in my life that I have kind of a, I mean, there's no way I can know what it would have been like to be at Woodstock.
Nobody there did either.
That I can look at the situation and say, well, here are 15 things that would have been hell for me. And again, if I could make it the ideal, not bringing reality into the situation at all situation, where I could fly in a helicopter and do a show without being electrocuted and leave immediately after, that would be one thing. But that just doesn't seem like how it went for any of the musicians there.
Yeah.
Even the musicians were kind of at the mercy of the situation.
Mike, what about you? Would you go back and a little older?
Yeah, I think I would, at least to see what it was, something I could remember. Because you have to remember also, the movie is a fantasy. This is the best of everything. And there,
think about how many bad stuff happens in the movie.
Well, exactly. But if you look at it, it is just, you know, it, I would love to experience it myself. That's one of my favorite places in the world to be, is up there. And, you know, I grew up there, and it has so many good memories. And to see what everybody else was talking about and everything. Because even growing up, you would have go by fields. Oh, see that overgrown school bus over there? That brought people to the concert. They just couldn't get it out of the field, you know, and stuff. Or, you know, hearing this and that. And just seeing it in it, what really happened and everything. It's just awesome. So, yeah, I would do it.
Well, it was definitely a thing that... I was going to say, it's definitely a thing that happened. But it was an amazing thing that happened. I think a lot of people just look at it as, you know, a film festival, as a music festival. And a lot of great bands were there. But I think it's more, you know, watching the documentaries, both the documentary film, the music one, and the Netflix one. And there's certainly other things that you can watch and read too, that are out there. But to find out more about the event, what happened, you know, outside of the music itself, to me is impressive, maybe even more so than the music that was played there. The fact that 500,000 people got together.
People.
And, you know, there weren't a lot of like, there wasn't much violence at all. Only two people died. You know, it was, you know, I mean,
one was a heroin overdose and one was an accident. A kid goes,
got run over by a tractor. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what is actually pretty cool? You can actually go online and see the medical records that, you know, they kept a log of all the different, injuries and such from the concert. And, you know, I think it's at the Woodstock Museum that they have on the site now. But you can actually go online and see it. And the most you'll see of the injuries that were reported were people with cuts on their feet.
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of people. There were about, I think they said an estimate of like 300 people that had to be like taken, like helped down because of the bad highs that they were on.
Oh, exactly.
A lot of people were trying things for the first time. That's where Woodstock is really where LSD became a thing. Because LSD really wasn't a thing until like it was introduced to 500,000 people at Woodstock. All of a sudden people were like, what is this? And then, you know, so that was the thing. And I know if I were there, my luck would have been like just before the guy announced, don't take the brown acid, is when I would have taken the brown acid. So
you'd be like, now they tell me. Okay.
I would have taken it.
Took the brown acid. What am I supposed to do?
It's like oh, that no. One brown acid, like, that was mud.
I'd be afraid to have a bad trip anyway. But now that the guy just planted that in my head, it's like, oh, now I'm going to have a nightmare.
So now I'm going to even be more paranoid.
I'm going to head up right to the medical tent when and Wavy Gravy can talk me down. Well, very cool. Well, it's been awesome to talk about Woodstock with you guys, and appreciate it. And yeah, we will end this segment and we'll be right back with the ESO Network Con.
How deep? Dragon Con 2019 is fast approaching. So fill up your buckets of rum and keep up with the latest news, announcements, interviews, and mispronunciations of guest names as only the Con Report podcast crew can make. Let us be your guide each month as we count down to the big event on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite media player. Listen to the Dragon Con Report. It's almost as good as being there, but without the long lines, smelly gamers, and hangover.
For the week of August 22nd, 2019, it's the ESO Network Con Report.
Well, there's an event coming up here, and it's not, it's not nearly as huge as Woodstock. But for us geeks, it is very similar in feeling and finding a place among your tribe to hang out and just geek out and relax and have peace and geekery. And that is Dragon Con. Dragon Con is here in Atlanta, Labor Day weekend, which is August 29th through September 2nd. Look, ESO Network is going to be all over this place. I will be there. I will actually be at a table. I will have a table in the Comic and Pop Artist Alley. My table is 721, and I will be right next to Peter Cutler, who is 719. And we will have all sorts of cool Tiki Zombie stuff and other comic stuff that we're working on, as well as a new pin. There's a new Tiki Zombie pin, this one for Hulu. So we'll have that available at the show. We'll have the ESO Network books as well. So if you need a copy of Tales of the Station, volumes 1, 2, and 3, we've got them. We can hook you up for those as well. And Ricky and Bambi are going to be at my table as well. So it's going to be a blast. We're going to have a good time. That's just at my table. Now I'll also be doing panels. And of course, a lot of us are doing panels. Mike has got way more panels than I do. But before we get into our panels, I want to just run real quick and mention some of the other people who are going to be there from the network. Chris and Tina are going to be there representing the Nerd Bliss podcast. Joe and Brad, of course, Joe and Brad are going to be there. They're there every year for the Cigar Nerds. Nicole from Terminus Podcast is going to be there. This will be the first time I've ever seen her at Dragon Con. She usually doesn't come out to the big, big, big shows. But David Tennant, that'll get her. That gets her out there. Speaking of Doctor Who, from Earth Station Who, of course, Mike and I will be there, but Mary Ogle will be there as well. In fact, we'll be recording a panel as part of the Brit track. Nathan from the 42 cast. I think this will be his second trip to Dragon Con. He'll be there. Making his very first Dragon Con appearance ever, all the way down from Canada, is Sean Vanderloo. He is behind the Rusted Robot podcast, as well as the Soul Forge podcast here on the ESO Network. And someone who's always comes to Dragon Con, Kevin from the Flopcast, he will be there. And the mayor of Chickentown, Felicity, will be there as well, representing Chickentown. Thunder Talk, which is a new podcast on the ESO Network. Dan will be representing that. Well, Dan, there'll be other people there from Thunder Talk, Mike?
Yes, they will.
Okay. They're a new network. They're a new show on the network, so I don't know everybody who's on that show. Dan's going to be representing. I think
there's going to be four of them from Thunder Talk.
Wow. Okay. So speaking of new podcasts that are just joining the network, we already talked to Thomas and Adam, and Thomas will be at the Dragon Con, right?
Yes, sir. Thomas will be there, and hopefully it'd be great to meet him face to face for the first time.
Absolutely. And also representing the Dragon Con Report, Mary Lou, and Darren Noel will be wandering around partying. And last but certainly not least, they have been with us on the network since almost day one of the network. Jason and Rita from the various Transmissions podcast, Transmissions from Atlantis, Transmissions from Gallifrey, they will be attending as well. So those are the official ESO Network representatives that are going to be at Dragon Con. There's plenty of other friends of the station that are going to be there as well. Including you. If you're going to be there, you are a friend of the station. If you listen to the show, if you're listening right now, you are a friend of the station. If you're going to be at Dragon Con, come by our panels, come by and say howdy to us, come by my table. I would love to meet you. We are going to be doing a lot of panels. I've only got four, which is enough. It's going to keep me busy. Two of them are ones that I'm going to be on with Mr. Faber. One is the Earth Station One Presents Galaxy Quest 20th anniversary. Mike and I, along with some other friends of the station, Darren Powell. Why did I say Powell? That's what it says.
Darren Powell?
That's what it says on the notes I got. That's what the Dragon Con sent me a list, and it says Darren Powell.
Boy.
Yeah.
Boy.
Sorry, let me start that again. That's exactly what it says. I'm like, Darren Powell?
Powell? Thank you, Joe.
Three, two. Mike and I will be on that panel, and also we'll feature some friends of the station, Tara Newman, Darren Noel, and Will Nix will be joining us to celebrate.
Actually, Jennifer Adams is also going to be joining us. She is one of our patrons who actually donates at the top level, and she got to pick a panel that she wanted to be on.
Ding, ding, ding. So it does pay to be a patron.
Very much so.
And you can celebrate the 20th anniversary of Galaxy Quest with us. Then on Saturday is the Earth Station Who panel, and that is Deconstructing Doctor Who. And that features Mike, myself, Mary Ogle, and as well as another Mike from the Drop of Mics that we have all over Dragon Con. Michael Faulkner will be there, and Tara Newman will be joining us as well for that one. And then as far as my panels goes, there's two others that I'll be doing on Saturday as well. At Saturday at 4 o'clock is the Show Us Your Tiki. It's the fourth annual Tiki Pop Art panel that I'll be on with. I'll be moderating that one as well as featuring, artist Derek Yaniger. Jonathan and Sarah will be joining us for that one too. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you can make it to that one, I would be grateful. We're going to have a blast. And then on Saturday night, it's at 10 p.m., the Needless Things podcast presents Troublemaker, the movie. I will be hosting that celebration. We'll actually be airing the entire movie about Dave called Troublemaker. And it will feature also the director, Jason C. Woods. Dave will be there, and some other special, very special guests will be in attendance as well. You'll get free swag for that one, too. So you want to come out and see the movie, get some swag, just have a great time. It's going to be a blast.
Are they going to give each and every person a wrestling mask?
Maybe. Well, I do know it's going to be something you can wear. I can tell you that. It's going to be something you can wear. And that's all I'll say. But so those are the four panels I'll be on. Mike, I know you've got a few more than that. So without further ado.
Okay, I'm going to be on 10 panels actually this year. Going to be on starting on Friday at 10 a.m. We're going to be, of course, doing Spider-Man, your friendly Far From Home web crawler. That's through the American Sci-Fi Track. Then we have at 1 p.m. on Friday, Creating Digital Media, the Art of Doing a Live Podcast. Should be actually a lot of fun to talk about. And then, of course, Mike had mentioned the Galaxy Quest 20th anniversary at 5:30 on Friday. Saturday, we have the Classic Sci-Fi Roller Panel, which is the Batman's 80th anniversary at 10 a.m. And that's through our friend Joe Crow at the American Classic Sci-Fi Track in the Marriott. 1 p.m., we're doing the Earth Station Who, and that's Deconstructing Doctor Who. And then at, ready for this, folks, at 8:30 p.m. on Saturday, I'm going to be working with our friend Dr. Q, and we're doing Bill and Ted. That's right. We are going to be talking about Bill and Ted and how it applies to alternative timelines and such, and how it's, you know, affecting the past, the present, and the future. It's pretty cool stuff.
A couple of righteous dudes.
Sunday at 11:30, I am going to be doing with the Brit Tracks a James Bond panel to talk about the 50th anniversary of James Bond. So it should be a lot of fun. And because there's so many different anniversaries, because this year is the anniversary of Her Majesty's Secret Service, 40th of Moonraker, and 30th of License to Kill, and 20th of the world is not enough. So a lot of James Bond to talk about this year. Then we are going to be doing at 4 p.m. on Sunday, the how to get started in digital media. That's basically how to, if you want to get into podcasting, live video or audio, we're going to be talking all about that with the podcast track, or sorry, new media track. And then last but not least, on Sunday at 7 p.m., also with the new media track, we are doing Pitch the Digital Media Pros. It's kind of like Think Shark Tank, but with podcasts. So it should be kind of fun to do. And then Monday at 11:30, I am doing Russian Doll, which is an amazing show on Netflix. And we're going to be talking all about that. And that's back over at the American Sci-Fi track. So that's what I have right now. You never know who will pull me into other panels and such, because this is a light year for me. So it's only 10.
So you can find us at those panels and, you know, check out the other people on the ESO network because they'll be posting their panel schedules as well. And if you want to find out about more things to Dragon Con to be excited about, please check out the final episode of the Dragon Con Report, which is going to be, it should be out by the time you're listening to this. So check it out. It's just full of everybody talking about what we're looking forward to. A lot of friends of the station are joining us. A lot of people contributed, sent us emails. Thank you so much for participating, everybody. It was a blast to put together this episode. And I think it really gets you excited for the event itself. So if you are traveling to Atlanta for Dragon Con, this is something that you can just pop in your ears and it'll get you ready, prepared as much as possible for the main event. So that's all I have as far as that's enough. You know, I mean, that's the big event. So that's what we've got going on post Dragon Con. There's some stuff happening for sure. We'll get to all that in a couple of weeks. But for the meantime, if I don't see you at Dragon Con, I will see. We'll be recording a lot of stuff. So that'll be available through our patrons. And a couple things we'll dish out as freebies. So we'll try to bring the con to you as much as possible. And we hope to see you guys there. And if not, then we will definitely be here, you know, next week and the week after and the week after, because Earth Station 1's not going anywhere. And we love talking about conventions. So please reach out.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining and listening us ramble about Woodstock this week. It was a lot of fun. Let's thank our guests, of course. Of course, first, Ricky and Bambi, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Anything you guys want to promote?
Mike Tiki Zombie is going to be at Dragon Con this weekend, and we'll be helping him out at his table.
Awesome. So stop by, you know, and say hey to the friends of Radio Cult. Be very cool to see them. Awesome. So you'll be at their table the whole time or just certain days?
We'll be there a lot on Saturday. And other than that, I think we're playing it by ear.
Okay.
It's going to be so much fun.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome. That is really, really awesome. Well, cool. It's going to be great to see you guys there. And thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. And Michelle, thank you, of course, for joining us for the music segment.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for all the work you've done over, gosh, almost 2 years now doing the segment each week.
Time flies.
Yeah, we're all having so much fun, aren't we? That is awesome. Anything you want to shout out about?
Well, on the blog, iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, talking about some ladies that should be considered for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We're getting into prediction season and nomination season close on its heels.
That is awesome. Any hint who you're going to get, who you're predicting?
I think I will have Nine Inch Nails on my list and Todd Rundgren. Other than that, that's as far as I've gotten.
Well, okay. that'd be very interesting to see who's could be eligible this year too. So it should be a lot of fun, and I'm sure we'll talk all about it.
We will.
We will. Hey boy, that's going to be right there on the corner, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Mike, we made it through another one, my friend.
We did. And, you know, we did, man.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful, man.
It was really nice, man.
There were a lot of freaks, but it was awesome.
Yeah, we didn't really invoke the spirit. We should have all just been like stone.
And who says we? And who says we aren't? No.
True.
Speak for yourself.
Okay.
Square.
Damn! Why didn't I get some?
Square.
I guess so.
Mark.
Yeah. So, what do you got to shout out about, Mikey?
I want to give a shout out to, I think it was last week. It was either last week or the week before. I was giving a shout out to my good friend Robert Jimenez, the artist of the cover for Tiki Zombie number 3, as well as the ESO volume 3, ESO Tales of the Station. And he has a Kickstarter that I think is just finishing up now. He is actually appearing on the Needless Things podcast in a mini cast episode with Dave West. So go check that out and listen to him, and then go right to his Kickstarter and help finish him out.
That is awesome. All right. My shout out real quick actually ties into the main topic actually that we talked about Woodstock. Two things we're going to talk about real quick. Up on Amazon, other than the box set, there's also a book out there called Barefoot in Babylon, The Creation of the Woodstock Music Festival, 1969. It's a nice 500-page short little book that you can read, and it talks about the ins and outs and all the trouble they were going into about making the festival. And, you know, they also talk about, you know, these guys who put on the festival, they weren't planning on doing a free music festival. It just happened, and they all went bankrupt. But thank goodness they've decided to film it for a documentary, because that's what actually pulled them out of the financial troubles. And there's a brand new 50th anniversary with a foreword by Graham Nash. And it is well worth looking at and really checking out. It's a great, great book, and it's something I studied and such, and that's how I learned a lot about the history about Woodstock. Also, if you ever are in upstate New York in the Catskills and decide to, you know, go explore, now they have where the site was. It's not a farm anymore. It's now the Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, and they have a Woodstock Museum there, and they also have live performances still there. You have, you know, an amphitheater that's just like, you know, what you have in your usual town and everything. And it seats like 35,000 people, and bands like Dave Matthews play there, Green Day, Fish, you know, all these people. And a lot of the original performers from Woodstock play there all the time too. So it's actually pretty neat to do. And like Michelle had mentioned earlier, the site is now a historic location as of 2017. So it's pretty neat, and it's definitely worth the visit. So definitely you could check that out. We'll have a link to the center up there so you can check it out yourself. With that being said, we are done for this week. I wanted to thank everyone at home and our patrons for helping us out, and looking forward to seeing everybody next week at Dragon Con. But we will be back one more episode before the con. We're gluttons for punishment, aren't we, Mike?
Yes, we are.
But we're going to go back to the wrestling ring. That's right. The Ladies of GLOW are back for season 3, and we're going to be talking all about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. But until then, my name is Mike Faber, or you could call me Moonbeam if you want. And we'll see you next time here on your Station 1 podcast. Peace. And we're done, dude.
And we're done, man.
Man, we're out of here.
We're just done.
You've been listening to the Air Station 1 podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Air Station 1 is available on most social media sites, where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Thank you.